Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today we're going to be talking about informed consent and refusal during childbirth. During pregnancy and birth, it has somehow become okay for others to tell the person giving birth what they can and cannot do with their bodies, even when being subjected to unsafe care and in violation of their human and legal rights. So what can you do about it? Kristen Piscucci tells us more. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Precious, the iOS app that automatically organizes your baby's photos into monthly pictures, time-lapse slideshows, photo calendar journals, and so much more. Go to preciousapp.com/birthful to start your free 3-day trial to their premium Baby Art Unlimited. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by Simply Breastfeeding, a prenatal breastfeeding course to help nursing parents feel confident with their newborns. Learn more at birthful.com/simplybreastfeeding and use the code Birthful for 15% off. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thank you, as always, for all the love you give the show and your feedback, requests, ratings, reviews, your general support. If what you hear is helpful, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing. And you can also support this podcast by supporting its sponsors, which for this week's case are the Precious app and Simply Breastfeeding. Also, you can support the podcast by becoming an official Birthful patron at patreon.com/birthful. And as a thank you, you get access to extra content for this and any future episodes, as well as access to ad-free episodes. And for example, for this episode, I am giving away a handout that I have explaining the BRAIN acronym for informed decision making that also has a printout wallet card that partners can have in their wallet and just take to the births with them for easy reference. I also want to give you a quick reminder that if you've only prepared for the having a birth part and not so much for the having a baby part, you are only halfway there. Let me help you make the process in the first few weeks with your newborn so much easier. Go sign up for my Thrive with Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes at birthfulcourses.com. Let's get you postpartum ready. So, all right, for today's renewed episode, I have the immense pleasure of talking with Kristen Piscucci, who is the founder of Birth Monopoly, where she advocates for a freer maternity care market, working closely with leading national advocates, organizations, and birth lawyers, as well as educating the public and healthcare providers about women's human and legal rights in childbirth. Kristen has been the vice president of the Improving Birth Organization and is the co-creator of the Exposing the Silence Project, as well as host of the Birth Aloud Radio, which is a wonderful podcast that she started after we first recorded this episode. Kristen is now working on a documentary film on the subject of obstetric violence called Mother May I, and I am very much looking forward to having that be done and being able to watch it. If you are a doula, you may be interested to know that Kristen has also recently released a new resource page for doulas at the Birth Monopoly website that puts together really good information created by Kristen with the purpose of changing the paradigm in the doula world to one that embraces doulas as confident and powerful advocates in the birth room. And that's something that's always like difficult to navigate and we could all use some help with. So I have added the link to that page in the show notes. Okay, so let's get to the show. Here we go. Welcome, Kristen. It is such an immense pleasure to have you here. I'm very excited.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we're talking today about informed consent in childbirth and, you know, things related to that. Let's start right at the beginning. Like, what does that even mean?
Informed consent?
Right. Yeah. And how does it relate to childbirth?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's probably sort of a dry phrase that is a lot more interesting, at least to me, than it sounds. Informed consent is one of our most basic rights in our healthcare. It's sort of rooted in the idea that each of us owns our own bodies, which, you know, sounds really simple and sort of, you know, sort of basic, but it means a lot in especially in maternity care. So informed consent is the process by which a healthcare provider informs a patient about the risks and benefits and alternatives to anything that they're suggesting, and then gets the free, non-coerced consent of the patient to perform that procedure or, you know, whatever it is. And that also includes the right of refusal, which is really important. That's the right to say no to anything that has to do with your body. So this is really critical in maternity care because just the way sort of that field has evolved, you know, women throughout sort of the history of childbirth or modern history of childbirth, women have often been sort of treated like passive people rather than active sort of directors in their own births. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times there's a little bit of a learning curve when it comes to informed consent, because you'll see a lot of routine practices and procedures and policies don't necessarily come with informed consent, even though women are definitely owed informed consent.
Yeah, and I do want to get to the part of talking about policy and digging deeper into what those are, what those mean, where they come from.
Sure.
But before we go there, let's talk a little bit more about so in terms of this informed consent and refusal, the right of autonomy of your body, basically, and decision-making. Yeah. I understand that how maternity field has evolved into this, and it is a tricky situation where you've got the consideration of the mother and the consideration of the baby. And so mm-hmm. sometimes when I speak to you know, whoever about this concept of your rights in childbirth, there's always the, but, you know, not if it's going to harm the baby. Right. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, I think it's important for people to have a little bit of context for the system, which is, and I'm not saying anything new here. A lot of our routine procedures and policies and practices are actually harmful to babies. And a lot of the things that you see families sort of pushing back on are those very things. So families are saying, I've done a bunch of research and I realized that actually this isn't good for the baby. And so I'm going to exercise my right to informed consent and refusal in this instance and say, you know, I'm going to opt for something different, or I'm going to just say no to that thing. So I think it's really important that people understand that, that I think we can assume for the most part that the mother and or the parents are most concerned about the safety of the baby. And if we start with that, you know, it sort of switches the onus from, you know, what the care provider is sort of dictating about it to the care provider empowering the mother to make, you know, to make the choice that's right for her and her baby. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so in terms of putting that into practice, like finding their voice and getting their wishes across, how can the laboring woman and her support team communicate with care providers to make sure they're heard?
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, just to cut to the chase on the whole thing, the number one most important thing is who you pick as your care provider. And I know that, you know, unfortunately, not everyone has a choice or has a lot of choice in that. For those who do have a choice, I would say exercise that choice. Find someone who it's not going to be a struggle, or it's not going to be a fight, or it's not where you're going to have to figure out how to communicate with them. Find someone who already communicates in those terms, and then you can skip this whole, you know, this whole issue. But of course, you can't always predict either, you know, who you get, and you, you know, might have different staff members, you know, which, you know, those, you know, nursing staff or aides or techs, and those aren't necessarily things you can plan for. But I think starting with a sense of confidence about what your rights are, and almost like grounded in yourself, I think is really, really important, so that you don't, so you're not automatically starting out like, you know, on your back foot, that, you know, where you feel like you have to ask permission, because it really should be the other way around. And I think developing that sense of confidence comes from educating yourself, from practicing how you're going to communicate, which I've made a handout about, just to get people sort of, you know, warmed up to that idea. I also, you know, for people who have the time, you know, look into nonviolent communication skills. Mastering Respectful Confrontation is a great book, by Joe Weston. And, you know, that just sense of confidence that comes from, you know, being, knowing your rights, feeling like a valued, respected person, with maybe, you know, having a little bit of practice in what exactly you're going to say when you have some questions, or you need a little more time, or you've already decided that that's something that you're going to refuse.
Mm-hmm. And I love the two resources that you mentioned. Your handout is fantastic, so we'll definitely link to that in the show notes. And this book sounds fabulous, so I'll also link to that. And
it's great.
And I'll look into reading it. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. If you have a phone filled with baby pictures that you keep meaning to better organize or do something with them, then let me tell you about the Precious app. Frankly, I really wish the Precious app was available when my daughter was little so I could have used it. But since I cannot do that now, I decided to have one of my doula clients try out the app so I could share her feedback with you. And after she used it for a few days, I checked in to see what she thought. She said that the Precious app is easy to use, and she likes how every morning it puts together the previous day's photos into a collage for her. She thought the Precious app would be great for first-time moms who take tons of photos each day, because it would help them see, organize, and share the photos better. Now, she herself has 5 kids, so the Precious app has helped her be able to put together quick and very cute collages without having to spend much time, which, as you would imagine, is something she doesn't really have. She says that if you don't like the picture that was created automatically, you can also swap it out or edit it, change words, change filters, and use any of the included stickers, frames, and other art options which come with the app, and then share it directly from the app itself without having to go to your photos and opening that. She also found helpful the ability to switch between profiles of each of her children, which then makes it easy for her to organize the pictures for each kid. Precious scans your photo library for the absolute best pictures of your baby, then it uses them to automatically make milestone collages, slideshows that show your baby's growth over time, and a lot more. And because it does it for you, it could not be more convenient. If you subscribe to the premium version of Precious called Baby Art Unlimited, you get watermark-free photos and unlimited access to the app's full creative library of over 5,000 stickers, frames, and creative tools. Create heart-melting monthly milestone photos today with Precious. Go to preciousapp.com/birthful and start your free 3-day trial to Baby Art Unlimited. That's preciousapp.com/birthful for your free 3-day trial of Baby Art Unlimited. And we're back talking with Kristen Piscucci about informed consent and refusal during childbirth. And we were talking about the book by Joe Weston as a resource, the book Mastering Respectful Confrontation. And, you know, it is kind of like weird and bizarre that we're talking about, you know, arming yourself with or learning techniques for nonviolent forms of communication.
Yeah.
As part of a birth skills and tools for your birth, you know?
I know. It seems kind of ridiculous sometimes. But, you know, unfortunately, it's just reality, you know?
And there's also the fact that no matter how much you prepare, when you get to a hospital, you're placed in a, in under, you know, you're in an environment that's completely unfamiliar to you, and where there's levels of expertise around machinery and you know, things going on around you, that then you feel that you're not you're a little out of your depth. And if you're in labor, you are going into deeper states of consciousness, like you're kind of vulnerable and not quite there. So it creates a hard...
I just want to like emphasize that point, which is, you know, don't be overconfident in thinking that, you know what, I am a confident person, so I don't need to know these skills. Because like you just said, you know, the most confident person can really be intimidated in that moment. Like, I've been there. Like, I know what that feels like. And being like, oh my goodness, like you said, I'm really out of my depth right now. And you don't want that to happen unexpectedly, you know, to go in thinking, you know, because I'm a confident person in, you know, real life, that that will just automatically translate into my maternity care. You know, from a personal perspective, it was, I wasn't used to being treated like without a lot of respect. This sounds like such a ridiculously privileged statement, but it's just true. I just wasn't used to being treated in such a sort of, like I was a child. And so it caught me off guard, even though I went in really confidently. It was like, oh my goodness, like, I don't even know how to talk to these people because I'm so thrown off by, you know, by the way I'm being treated right now. It's just like really bizarre to me. So I don't know. My point is just that you can't prepare too much. You never know how you're going to react when you're under a little bit of pressure and, you know, you're dealing with some sensations in your body as well.
Yeah. And you made a great point earlier about, you know, like you have this beautiful quote that I just love, which is, you can't act like a mother when you're being treated like a child. And the system kind of, you know, you made that great point of, make sure like who you choose to be there, who's your care provider, that's the main person going to bat for you basically within this environment, and paying attention to how they're treating you and how, what language they're using. I mean, with the birth monopoly, you also have all your merchandise that says, you're not allowed to not allow me.
And right.
That's such a incredibly to the point, essential core of this whole idea of the care providers are allowing you to do this and this and this and this during birth.
Right. And it really is the other way around. Like, from a legal rights point of view, from a human rights point of view, from an ethical point of view, it is the mother who gives or does not give permission to anyone else to do anything to her body.
No matter what.
It's not the other way around.
Yeah. So, knowing all of these things, having practice, and I encourage people to, you know, follow the link and get your handout and then look at the phrases you have there of how to like get time and say no, and do practice it, as you mention it, even role play it, even though I always feel silly role playing practicing in front of the mirror, but yeah, there's something about your body doing that muscle memory.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really helpful to practice with, you know, have someone pretend to be a nurse or a doctor and, you know, have them get aggressive with you or have them get passive aggressive with you, you know? It is really helpful. It's just one of those things, you don't ever think you're going to be in that situation. And then when you are, it can be really uncomfortable. And like you said, it might feel silly, but man, are you going to be grateful for that little bit of muscle memory if you ever actually need it?
Mm-hmm. So what if you've practiced your phrases and you're like, you know, you've managed many ways of saying no thank you and can we have more time and you are still not being heard? Like if you need to take it to the next level, what suggestions do you have for that?
Well, you know, I would also say something that we haven't talked about very much is the role of the partner. Mm-hmm. You know, we always say that, you know, it's the mother's right and it's the mother's responsibility. But the fact is, that's a really big responsibility to put on someone who's in labor. You know, when she's made it clear that, and, you know, obviously I'm not talking about speaking on behalf of the mother, but, you know, when she's made clear how she feels about something, if she says, for example, you know, no, I don't want to get in bed. I'm going to walk around. And, you know, she's being repeatedly pressured to do something different. It's totally appropriate for the partner to step in and give her that space. You know, the power dynamic, I think, is a little bit different when it comes to, you know, the birthing person versus someone else and the partner versus someone else. You know, it can be really helpful to have a little bit of a united front there and say very respectfully, you know what? She said that she needs to walk around. So I think we're going to let her walk around. Thank you very much. Something else, I totally lost my train of thought actually because I wanted to mention partners.
Yeah.
But so you were just saying your question was about, you know, if she's just not being heard, like she's sort of like repeatedly said whatever and she's not being heard.
Right. If she's being, she's being coerced more into something. Well, no, we really need to do this. And then you've said, you know, well, no, I'd like more time. Well, it's our, you know, even if it's like, it's our recommendation that you really should.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there are a couple of options. I would say at some point you might want to just say very firmly, I do not consent. I want you to put that in my record. Please note that in my medical records. I do not consent to the whatever, you know, the IV or, you know, whatever it is. Please put that in my medical records. I think that doing that sometimes can, like, break the spell of what's going on in there. When you remind someone that, you know what, like, this stuff is being documented. There's a bigger world than the little bubble that's happening right in this room right now. And, you know, I think once you hear the words, I do not consent. And then, you know, to actually write those words down, I do not consent, I think is kind of powerful for a person who's trying to get someone to do something that they don't consent to. I'm so sorry. I lost my train of thought again. It's like, I don't feel well. So I just keep like, I'm having trouble with like thought associations or something.
We were talking about, so, and I'm recovering from a break.
I had a second
point. So we're like
point.
Both in the same point.
I had a second point that now I can't remember. About do not consent. I do not consent. You know, another thing you can always do. Oh, I know what it was. If it's something that, you know, they clearly feel really strongly about, and, you know, a lot of times, frankly, you've got a nurse who, she has a job to do. She's been told, you know, these are the standard practices for, you know, the average woman who comes in, and all she knows is it's her job to get those things done. It can be really helpful to reassure them by saying, I would be happy to sign a waiver about this thing. You know, I think there's that fear of liability in the back of healthcare providers' heads a lot of times, even when they can't articulate to themselves that is what's motivating them. So to say, look, I'd be happy to sign a waiver, sign a release that, you know, that says, this was the decision I made, you know, based on the information that I have, and I accept responsibility for, you know, my decision. That can be an effective thing to do. And I've heard about parents, you know, using that sort of tactic successfully. So, mm-hmm. Another thought is to bring someone else in the room. And again, this is when, you know, a doula or a partner would probably need to help out. I've heard of people asking for the chaplain to come in. Which is, you know, sort of like a neutral third person, hopefully, who might bring, you know, a little bit of calm and break some of the tension. Every hospital has a patient advocate or a patient liaison. Some of them advocate more for patients, and some of them advocate more for their employer, which is the hospital. So that's something to bear in mind. But again, you know, when you're sort of out of other options, you know, those are good kind of last resorts. In really extreme situations, you know, I used to run a hotline where women would be basically in the moment and, you know, would call me, and I would have to, you know, help them basically do a legal intervention. And, you know, sometimes we'd have to call the hospital with a lawyer and say, you can't legally force that woman into that C-section, or, you know, something like that. But hopefully our parents aren't going to be getting anywhere close to, you know, needing that level of intervention.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I would, that hotline no longer exists.
Yeah. No, I don't really, you know, I think I would definitely take a call if someone called me, but, no, I don't,
yeah,
I don't really do that very much anymore.
Yeah. Understood. But and it's so amazing that you were doing that and having that extra support for women in labor, and also baffling and crazy that that was needed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. 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 I know. Well, you know, there's such a misunderstanding about the rights of pregnant people. I mean, such a misunderstanding. There's, you know, some places that, like, I swear they've never even heard the term informed consent and refusal. You know, I'm part of, you know, a bunch of different birth-related groups on Facebook. And yesterday I was watching a thread in this labor and delivery nurse group. And someone said, you know, gosh, sometimes I get so frustrated with doctors who don't ask permission before, or even notify the woman before they do an episiotomy. And most of the nurses said, yeah, that is, you know, that's terrible. That's frustrating. You know, I definitely see that too sometimes. And then there were a couple of nurses who said, we have to ask permission? I've never even heard of a doctor asking permission.
Oh.
Are they supposed to ask permission? Yeah. So, you know, so like I said, I think that there's just such a variation, mm-hmm. in awareness and practice around informed consent and refusal.
And so important why we need to keep sharing these things and making sure
right.
people understand that
yeah,
they have that right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you need to find out what your provider's level of awareness and how much they implement it is, because you don't want to be in the birthing room finding out that your doctor doesn't care about informed consent.
Mm. So we're going to talk a lot more about that and hospital policy. We're going to take a quick break and then come back to that part of it. Breastfeeding, it may be natural, but that sure does not mean it's easy. It's a learning process for both you and baby, and like most learning processes, it takes a lot of trial and error. However, this trial and error can sometimes come with a lot of crying, and not necessarily only from your baby. Help lessen the crying and frustration by arming yourself with some solid knowledge. A great way to prepare for this is by taking the Simply Breastfeeding online class created by breastfeeding experts Cindy and Jana. In their class, you'll learn to recognize what your baby is telling you and how to meet your baby's needs starting in the very first hour after birth. You'll also understand the basics of breastfeeding and be able to return to them if you encounter difficulties, and you'll feel confident knowing the answers to most frequently asked questions. Lessen your anxiety and frustration and relax knowing you've got this. Go to birthful.com/simplybreastfeeding to learn more. And as a Birthful listener, you get 15% off if you use the code Birthful when you register. Go to birthful.com/simplybreastfeeding or click the link on the show notes to get you on your way. And we're back and talking to Kristen Pascucci and about informed consent. So we mentioned a couple of times before the break about hospital policy. And so let's talk about that additional layer of, you know, that affects everyone, the nurses, the staff, you, the care providers, mm-hmm. regardless of your of things that happen to them or that are brought forth of needing to happen, quote unquote, regardless of their health circumstances or personal preferences. Can we talk about like where that comes from, what it means, how it affects or interacts with a person's right to informed consent and refusal?
Yeah, I think that is one of the big pain points, is that every hospital has policies and protocols that they, again, there's a variation, that some hospitals view those policies and protocols as guidelines, and some hospitals view them more as requirements. And that can be really, really tricky because when they're treating it like a requirement, then they're essentially asserting that they have the legal rights over your healthcare. And that is a major imposition on the rights of the person receiving the healthcare. And you'll hear a lot of people talk about like, you know, my doctor said I wasn't allowed to, you know, XYZ or like, you know, after the fact, oh, so great, they let me, you know, do whatever. And that's really problematic, even though it's just a sort of longstanding dynamic and a longstanding tradition of how we talk about the relationship between patients and providers. It's a really harmful dynamic, you know, for birthing women to have that idea that anyone can let or allow or not let or not allow them to do anything. But a lot of times when we're told, you know, it's hospital policy, we think, oh, well then my rights end at hospital policy. The reality is like, you know, I mentioned a couple of minutes ago about nurses are responsible for policies and protocols. However, your legal rights as a patient are not less than their obligations to their employer, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So your legal rights trump the preferences of the hospital, whether those preferences are, you know, policies or they're just routines or they're protocols or, you know, whatever that is. You know, we're talking about our most basic civil rights here. But, you know, like I started off saying, it's a big misunderstanding. And so it's not as easy as just saying to a healthcare provider or saying to a hospital, well, you know, I have rights and I disagree with your policy and I'm not going to follow it, because you're talking to people who often truly believe that they do have the legal right to impose their preferences on you, which is why I always talk about nonviolent communication and mastering respectful confrontation, because it takes some skills to, you know, sort of like directly contradict something that someone's saying to you without escalating the situation. And even more than that, keeping those people on your team, you know? You might need those people's help. There's a good chance, you know, chance that you're going to want, right, their cooperation. And we want everybody to be on the same page.
Yeah, because it's not like you say, well, no, I'm not going to, you know, not eat or drink and then goodbye, I'm out of here. Like, you still have to do
right.
the
you're,
rest of
you're
your
still
labor
be there
and push.
For another
and,
right. day. Right.
So that brings in a great point of that's the great fear, right, of being labeled as difficult or problematic or being retaliated in some way, that your care deteriorates even more because you've refused
absolutely.
To do something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely sadly and unfortunately, and it's, you know, something we hate to have to talk about, but you know, exercising your rights doesn't come with impunity, unfortunately. When you're in a system that is really weighted heavily against you using your rights, it's not as simple as just saying, well, this is what I'm going to do and live with it, and everybody says, okay, great. Awesome. How can we support you next? You know, they're human beings. They have emotions and they have feelings and they have motivations and fears and biases, just like you do and just like I do. And, you know, we have to work with that.
Yeah. And I think what makes it extra hard is that a lot of those policies aren't evidence-based. They aren't necessarily what, you know, is best for mom and labor or baby, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah. And that's true. But again, that's probably something that you can figure out much earlier in pregnancy with your care provider. When you go in, you know, I always say the best use of a birth plan is as a communication tool. The best use of a birth plan is actually during pregnancy, not necessarily in labor and delivery at the time that you're having a baby. It's a good way to determine whether or not your care provider really is a good fit for you. If they are practicing evidence-based care, you know, because it's kind of easy to find that out in, you know, in some ways it's kind of easy because when you have a birth plan and you have certain things on there, you can simply talk to your care provider and say, you know, what is your, how do you feel about this? Is this a standard practice for you? Is this, have you done this before? Have you done this a lot? Do you get a lot of moms asking for this? How do you feel about it? So you should be able to get a feel for that. You know, some providers are very upfront and they'll say, you know, nope, we don't do things that way here. and that's all there is to it. And then other times, you know, this is, again, like one of those unfortunate things we hate to have to talk about, but it's sort of like I've said before, like if you have like a boyfriend that you're trying to figure out, like, does he really love me? And you're like, okay, so do you love me? And he's like, yeah, I mean, sure, of course I do. There are many ways that someone can respond to that question that gives you an indication about whether or not they really, truly love you and or are going to support what you want, are going to support your wishes versus I'm just going to go ahead and agree with what you're saying in this moment because it's easier for me and it will get this conversation over sooner.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And then you have to be like a little, almost like a spy reading into the language that it's being used, right? Did an allow or did that slip out?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, but one thing I think is to really stretch out the conversation. You know, if I were trying to determine, if I were trying to like make a determination about some really important information, like I would never, you know, if I were buying a house, I wouldn't say, so isn't it a good neighborhood? And the real estate agent says, yeah, it's a great neighborhood. I wouldn't go, all right, sweet, I'll take it. Like that's not how it works, right? I would say, okay, so buy a great neighborhood, you know, how close is it to the nearest restaurant? So, you know, what school district is it? What are the crime stats in the neighborhood? You know, like I would really get into what does that mean that it's a great neighborhood? Rather than just walking away going, okay, well, they said yes, you know, or they said no, or they said, you know, whatever the simple answer is. And if you find that they're uncomfortable talking about it more, that's a red flag. You know, if it's like, if you're getting the feeling that they're irritated that you want more detail or they're irritated that, you know, you're curious or you want more information or, you know, you just simply want to talk about it more, then that's a red flag. That's a red flag that, you know, they just want to get the conversation over and it might be that they're just telling you what you want to hear in order to accomplish that goal.
Absolutely. No, that's huge. And I think what you were speaking to at the beginning of practicing, you know, bringing your confidence into the birth and labor, you've got to bring that confidence also into the visits with your care provider, because sometimes it can be intimidating that you have 5 minutes with this, you know, doctor and they're whatever, like not really because of a time crunch not answering your questions,
right? But that's a problem.
Yeah, huge.
I mean, you deserve to have your questions answered. That is all there is to it. You are the person who is at the center of that care, And if they don't have time for your questions, then I would really consider that seriously. If they don't have time for your questions in that moment and they're okay with providing you care like that, what's it going to be like when you're giving birth with them? Are they going to have time for you? Are they going to prioritize your comfort and your, providing you with information? That's the last thing I would want to, be in that situation would be in, giving birth and having a care provider refuse to, elaborate on something or refuse to engage with me and just say, well, that's just how we do it. Or, you know what I mean? Just sort of like giving you the feeling that they're in a hurry. That's not cool. It's
Absolutely.
not good care.
No. And then that's it. You deserve good care. So be confident and like switch it up. It comes from you. You're
Well,
not, you're not allowed to lie around
yeah.
me. Yeah.
Well, I've heard, I remember one woman saying that she said, every time I go to a new practitioner, the first thing I say to them is, listen, I'm one of those patients. So I just want to warn you, I'm one of those patients. I want to know everything and I have lots of questions and I want to talk about everything. And, and she's like very friendly and very approachable about it. But I think that's a really good way to start out, like gauge their reaction to that. I was really lucky when I started with a new OB practice that I like walked in during pregnancy with a piece of paper that had a list of questions. And the doctor immediately said, you know what, just stop right there. I think you might be a really good fit with one of our midwives. I can see you have a lot of questions, and that is really what they're great at. And so she offered, for me to have my next appointment with a midwife instead of with her or one of the other OBs. And that was really awesome. I didn't even know that a nurse midwife or a midwife was an option. And so it was really great that she basically was just like, look, the model I follow, I don't have that much time to answer your questions, but that's important to you. Go to a provider who that's important to them too.
Yeah. And then you got proper care. So great that she recognized that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was awesome. I was like so shocked, my prenatal care did like a 180 at that point when I could like sit in an appointment for 45 minutes and ask questions.
Yeah. And leave feeling better than when you came in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Kristen, do you, I know you do a lot of advocacy in general for maternity care. Do you
Huh.
find that the system is improving? Is it changing? What is going on to make it, we've been focusing on in the birth room, but at large, how are things doing?
Wow, that's a really good question. So I would say we're in a really different place than we were 4 years ago, in a good way. In some ways, I also see it though as improvements to maternity care were such a were so low on the list that I don't think people really paid attention to like birth activists and the sort of radical health the radical like practitioners who were trying to make change. I think for a long time the grassroots movement and the consumer movement to improve birth has been so underground that I don't think the system really saw people as a threat in a lot of ways. Like not a threat to like actually affecting some kind of long-term change. And I see that changing a little bit now where we've sort of like we've crossed the line between, there's the system and there's the activists. Activists are, communicating with the maternity care system now in a way that I don't know that I think is kind of unprecedented and I think is a really, really awesome thing. So I think, we're definitely way further along than we were before, and we have a really long way to go. But it's really promising and I'm really excited about it. We have, organizations that didn't exist before, that are doing really awesome work.
Go ahead and name some of them if people want to, you know, learn more about them.
Improving birth, birth monopoly, evidence-based birth. Evidence-based birth is huge. They're actually training providers now. She has an instructor program so that, you know, nurses and nurse midwives and doulas can learn about evidence-based practices and can also learn about how to implement evidence-based practice in their community, which is really, really big. That's just a resource that nothing like that has ever existed before.
It's one of my favorite resources, definitely,
yeah,
because of the clear, concise information and evidence-based, obviously.
Yeah. Hermine Hayes Klein is an amazing international human rights lawyer. She founded Human Rights and Childbirth, but she herself is just an incredible activist, and she's just done some really, really amazing stuff. And I work with her a lot, and I'm excited. We have some, I think, really, really cool projects cooking up right now. Sorry, not to talk about myself. Obviously, I'm speaking from my perspective here, my perception. So I think I know that Improving Birth is doing a Moms March in Washington in May, and that's partnering with, I think, ACOG and ACNM and some other organizations, which I think is really, really super cool. I mean, that's all I can think of off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. I'm sure as soon as we get off the phone, I'll have like five more.
Well, if you have more, you can send them to me and I'll link them. But I have seen.
You know what? I'm sorry. I did want to mention VBAC facts. For VBAC access has actually been sort of picking up steam and becoming a little bit more of a national priority, which is great. And Jen Campbell at VBAC Facts has been doing some great work for years on that, you know, just kind of all by herself. But she, you know, she's awesome and the work she does is great. And for any parent looking for information on VBAC, I love the factual and unbiased approach that she takes.
Mm-hmm. No, yes, I'm dying to have her on the show. We'll see. I'll try again.
Yeah.
She's so she's a busy woman. She does so many things. I completely understand.
And she's protective of her time.
Yes.
Which is like something we probably could all do better.
No, I totally
she
appreciate
it. She and Rebecca Decker are like, yeah, like my time is my time. Yeah.
And I have seen, you know, like, for example, recommendations and guidelines coming from ACOG, the language change in the past years. And
totally.
The one that just came out. Yeah. Talk about that.
Well, I was just going to say, actually, I'm glad you reminded me of that, because earlier I was saying that, you know, there's been more communication with the medical community. So I was with Improving Birth for 3.5 years, and a couple of the things we did there was to communicate directly with ACOG, which I remember, like, at the time that we had the idea, I was just like, why don't we just write ACOG? Like, do people write ACOG? Like, why don't we just talk to ACOG? You know, everybody's like, oh, ACOG this and ACOG that, and, you know, and everyone's like, why don't we just talk to them? You know, we can do that. This is 2000, you know, whatever. This is the 2000s. We were allowed to communicate with other people, and there are lots of ways to do it now. So there have been a couple of instances where we've simply written them letters or even met with them. And that is super cool, because I don't think that's ever happened before. You know, like, I don't think that, that ACOG has ever engaged with consumers ever, like, mm-hmm. to my knowledge. And I could be wrong about that. But I think that's a really big deal. And one of the really eye-opening things actually about talking to ACOG is that they have this idea that they're really in touch with consumers. And, I definitely would not agree with that statement. So I think it was really great to be able to say, like, actually, guys, like, I think you don't even have a clue what's going on. You know, like, you know, they're an elite group of doctors, and they probably are seeing much more evidence-based practice in the, you know, high-quality, progressive facilities where they are, but can be very disconnected from, you know, the stuff we see in Birmingham, Alabama, or, you know, or even Lexington, Kentucky, where I live.
Yeah. And I think it's thank you for going and talking to ACOG and, you know, trying to bring that communication of what showing what's really happening and what moms, you know, the consumer is experiencing and their take on it. Because it is at the root of all of this, it's communication is the key.
Yeah. And yeah, totally.
And I also think it communication and awareness. So even though the label might be pigeonholing, I think the media awareness and how it started to the mistreatment in maternity care that's been labeled, you know, quote unquote obstetric violence. And that's what I'm thinking. It's just very pigeonholing because it's not limited to obstetrics. Well, I guess it's obstetrics, not obstetricians, but it's hard to like, you know, not link the two. Having that be something that's being discussed in the media or in headlines.
Well, yeah, and like that didn't happen by accident. You know, like I led media strategy at Improving Birth for the years that I was there, and that was like one of our top goals was getting the maternity care crisis in media. And then I made it my personal goal about obstetric violence. I think, I don't remember if it was last year or the year before last. And that totally happened, and it's really exploded. And it's been really exciting because you can go back and historically do a historical search on the internet and see like the number of times that a phrase comes up or, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's really cool to look back and see that now we're talking about things that were like not even mentioned 5 years ago. Like we're not even in the media, are absolutely in the media. And so, you know, I think it's raising a lot of awareness and hopefully paving the road for a much bigger conversation.
Huge. And people do need to hear these stories. And I encourage listeners to do a Google search for obstetric violence so they can see, you know, what that's about. Like, just as people don't sometimes know that they have those choices to, from something as simple as you wear your own clothes, you know, that you don't have to wear the gown.
All those little ways that you can sort of assert your humanity.
Yeah, and show that you're not like you're not a patient. You're just a woman in labor.
Yeah,
you're not sick.
Yeah, yeah, right? And you're not, you know, you're not like an a gadget or a widget on an assembly line. You know that you are an individual and you expect individualized care.
Yeah, or my favorite, you know, the vessel for a baby, like the which is very objectifying, but. The other thing in terms of since we're talking about like all the big changes and big precedences that have occurred in the past few years, then there's the big win with the Alabama court case where.
Oh, yeah, that's sort of a big deal.
Yeah. Can you were very much involved in this. So can you like explain to people, let them know what happened?
Yeah, sure. So that case involved a woman named Caroline Malatesta, who is was a stay-at-home mom in Birmingham, Alabama, and she had three kids in sort of like the traditional Alabama way, which is a very medically managed, quote, controlled birth. And for her fourth baby, she got the idea in her head that she wanted to be able to move around in labor. And she started doing some research, and about that same time, the other big hospital in her city, Birmingham, launched this advertising campaign talking about natural birth and respect for birth plans and, you know, but, you know, all the stuff that she was looking for, you know, autonomy and freedom of choice and being able to move around. And, you know, we have monitors that, you know, make it so that you can move around in labor and that kind of thing. So she met with a doctor there, confirmed all that with him, and then ended up switching to that hospital while she was pregnant. And she went in for the birth, and she got there and everything was different from what they had advertised. There was no birth tub there. Although they had been advertising water birth and she had been, you know, talked to her doctor about it and been cleared for a water birth. They wanted her to get in bed, get her gown on, go to the bathroom. And they told her that she might not be getting out of bed again for the rest of her labor. And so she was sort of questioning the nurses, like, what do you mean? You know, my doctor said I could move around and, you know, he said I wouldn't have to be on my back. And, you know, the nurses were, you know, kind of irritable about it. I think they didn't appreciate that she was, you know, not just complying and saying, okay. She did actually comply though. She got in the bed and she got on her back for monitoring, and they didn't know it necessarily, but she was actually in transition and she was like ready to give birth. So she had a contraction and she flipped over to her hands and knees, which was the position she had been using throughout her entire labor to deal with contractions. And, so she got on her hands and knees and then the baby started coming out and she said, the baby's coming. And somebody grabbed her arm. One of the nurses grabbed her arm and pulled it out from underneath her and flipped her on her back. And another nurse held her baby's head in because the doctor wasn't there yet. And it was a really, you know, chaotic, jumbled, confusing, terrifying scene. The baby came out, the doctor walked in 6 minutes later, the baby was allowed to be born at that time. And, Caroline was really upset about the way things had happened. And she felt betrayed. And then over the months after her baby's birth, she started developing some pain in her groin area. And it turned out that she had this really, really severe, rare nerve injury that just got worse and worse to the point where they had to move back in with her parents, her and her four kids and her husband, if you can imagine that. Because she couldn't take care of herself and she couldn't take care of her family. So, long story short, sorry, I get like all into the details on this story.
No, but it's heartbreaking.
So she, you know, she finally got diagnosed. She finally, you know, had to go. Nobody could figure out what was wrong with her. They told her it would be fine. Just give it time. I remember at one point they said, well, we could just give you an injection that would effectively just kill the nerves down there. And then you'll be able to have sex again. And she was like, you mean I won't be able to feel, but I can have sex? Why would I want to do that? You know, like it was sort of like treatment like that, that it was just clearly not the highest quality. And a little bit dismissive of her. So anyway, she finally kept trying to talk to someone at the hospital about what had happened and figure out why she wasn't allowed to move around like she had been told that she could. And at some point, she had a hospital administrator on the phone, and the woman just basically said, you know what, look, I've spent enough time on this. We're not meeting with you and I have to go. And she hung up on her. And in that moment, Caroline said, I'm done. I'm filing a lawsuit. This is ridiculous.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Yeah. She's like, I had been nothing but nice and polite and just like confused up until then. And she was like, when that woman hung up on me, it was like, it like activated something in her. So she was really lucky, to actually, she knew a lawyer, which is, you know, obviously not common for most people, but, she was able to get a lawyer and they filed a lawsuit for not only her injury, but also for fraud, for recklessly misrepresenting the services that they were willing to, provide. They won the lawsuit, which was, I mean, a miracle. Women don't win lawsuits like this. And you know, the fraud case is, you know, the first that we've ever heard of in the country. She won the case, and the jury awarded her and her husband $16 million. And it was an amazing win. It was very emotional, you know. The jury, I think, saw very clearly what was going on in that situation. I was there for the whole trial, and it was just a really, it seemed like a very clear-cut case of just egregious behavior by this hospital, you know, that they did this advertising with no checks and balances, without, you know, without vetting anything, you know, and then really didn't care. They just didn't care that she was injured or that other women had potentially been harmed by their actions. And I think the jury really saw through it and gave her a whole bunch of money to show the hospital that they saw what was happening.
And it's a huge win on so many levels because it speaks, you know, we started the show talking about that there is fear in terms of like from care providers and of liability and lawsuits.
Oh yeah, but not
This is
this kind of
lawsuit to the other
liability.
point, right? This is
Yeah, not this kind of liability. Nobody brings these cases. Yeah. If
right, but
your baby isn't severely injured or deceased, you have no case in like as a rule. There are exceptions to that rule, but yeah.
right, so but
It's
this
really
is why
rare.
this case is so, and this win is so pivotal.
Right. Yeah, and you know, I mean, you're in this field. Not really sure how to say this, but like the carelessness with which, you know, information is provided, and you know, the conversations that women have with their care providers about how they actually practice. This was sort of like a big reality check for some of that. There are hospitals all over the country that are advertising the same thing as this hospital, and who also absolutely don't provide it. The fact that this woman brought a lawsuit and won it is incredible.
Yeah, and it speaks on you know, so many levels. It also speaks to the fact that this hospital and other hospitals are advertising to trying to appeal to
Yeah.
towards natural childbirth, basically, right?
Oh,
Towards
yeah.
not towards
Well, I
non-medicated
mean,
birth,
right,
because
exactly.
they understand that that's what the consumer wants.
That is absolutely true. We looked at a lot of their marketing materials, and including like internal stuff. And you know, their marketing department was tasked with beating the competition. That was the task. They, you know, whoever came up with the campaign was just like, "Hey, moms will buy this. Moms
Right.
will buy this." But there was no communication that we are aware of that ever came out in 3 years of litigation, that they actually talked to the people determining how care was being delivered. So the nurses weren't trained to manage an unmedicated birth. The nurses didn't know how to deal with a woman who wanted to walk around in labor at that stage. The nurses didn't know what to do other than to put her through, you know, the protocols that they were used to. They didn't have the training or the willingness to follow through on the things that were being advertised. And so, you know, like you said, we know this happens all over the place. It's not just this hospital. That hospital is owned by a giant corporation that owns a whole bunch of other hospitals. And guess what? They're all doing it.
Without changing care still.
Well, I mean, I can't speak to that with any, you know, with any certainty.
Like if like did this lawsuit specifically to this hospital and to their big group, did it, you know, make changes in any way of either the marketing, you know, not lying anymore or changing the actual
No,
care?
and you know, it was really interesting. One of the kind of shocking moments in the trial was when the the hospital marketing person was asked, so, you know, after all this has happened, like, we've all seen this evidence, would you change the way you do your marketing? And she said, no. I mean, I don't know how else to say it, that they just didn't care. You know, like, it was just like, this is what we do to get people in the door. And if it hurts somebody along the way, well, you know, I guess we'll just pay out the award when it happens. But, you know, this is what we're going to do. I don't know. Actually, that's not true. I know it did. Another thing that came out during the trial was that they had been developing a new set of orders for nurses that was for low intervention or unmedicated births, which is a great thing. The problem is that they were advertising those services before they ever implemented those orders. Mm-hmm. So they were clearly like moving in that direction. However, you know, it wasn't done in a responsible or ethical way, right, for sure. Yeah.
So basically, yeah, you just got to keep at it.
Yeah.
Like, really. And listeners, moms need to, like, you know, safeguard your yeah, environment, safeguard your birth, like, make sure your voice is heard.
You know what? You know, I say, be selfish. This is the one time in your life when you need to give yourself permission to be totally selfish. Be catered to. You deserve to be catered to.
Don't people and please.
If it's what?
Don't people please. Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like, oh, I didn't want to say that because I didn't want to, you know, but what you wanted to, yeah, please people around,
exactly,
you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, right. And, you know, and if that's like a hard thing to swallow or a hard, you know, a hard way to carry yourself, remember that you are protecting your baby. You are the only person who can do that. We're not talking about just like, you know, some like spoiled woman having her every whim met. We're talking about the person who is carrying the baby, and everything that affects that woman affects that baby, whether we're talking about what she's eating, to her stress levels, to her physical activity, to procedures or testing that is done in the course of her medical care. So it's a big responsibility. And, you know, I think we've got to be real clear about that and really embrace that responsibility. I do have the right to be selfish on behalf of my baby. I do. Because,
yeah,
you know what? You're going to have to be for the rest of your life. You
indeed,
might as well start now.
Absolutely. Know your rights. Yes. Kristen, thank you so, so much for this fantastic talk. I know we could talk forever, but let's...
Sure,
respect
you're welcome.
Our times, right?
Time, what's that?
I know. If people want to follow what you do, get in contact, know more about your work, how can they do that?
They can go to birthmonopoly.com. There's a bunch of stuff there, and I'm actually starting a radio show within the next few weeks. And there will be information there about that radio show.
Yay!
And so, like, that'll be out as a podcast, like, later. So they'll be able to listen to some of that, too.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for all you do.
Sure thing. Thank you as well.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. And if you want to further support this podcast, then please become a Birthful Patreon at patreon.com/birthful and join the Birthful community. As a thank you, you're going to get the extra content for this episode, which is a handout I created explaining the BRAIN acronym for informed decision making. The handout includes a printable wallet card that partners can use as a quick reference reminder that they can take with them to birth. You will also get the extra content for all other episodes and access to ad-free episodes. Find out more at patreon.com/birthful. And if what you want to do is get ready for life with a newborn, then go to birthfulcourses.com and sign up for my Thrive With Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes. Do it before a baby arrives. Let's get you postpartum ready. birthfulcourses.com. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, those amazing Birthful patrons, and the wonderful people at Precious App and Simply Breastfeeding. Go to preciousapp.com/birthful to start your free 3-day trial to their premium Baby Art Unlimited. And go to birthful.com/simplybreastfeeding and use the code birthful for 15% off their breastfeeding course. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin MacLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Also, the Birthful Podcast is part of the Parents on Demand Network, a network of podcasts focused on parents. Download the free Parents on Demand app on Apple and Android for easy on-the-go listening. Now, in preparation to renew this episode, I reached out and asked Kristen what she has for breakfast. She has half a cup of coffee or decaf in a breakfast bar if she's lucky. And on really big days, she has a couple of pieces of bacon. I'm Adriana Lozada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to a mighty parent as they share their amazing story here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2019 by Adriana Lozada.